Okay, so today we're diving into something pretty intense, I think. Where like the excitement of sports and, all the adrenaline and everything smashes right into the very serious world of the law, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. A place where the stakes are high in both arenas.
Exactly. And to really get into it, I thought we'd really dissect this case, Erickson v. Nunick.
Oh, an excellent choice. A real landmark case when it comes to liability waivers and what they actually mean.
Yeah, and this is important stuff for like anyone, even if you're not like a pro athlete.
Oh, absolutely. Anyone who participates in sports organizes events, even just watches from the
Or
sidelines.
coaches, yeah, for sure.
It's crucial to understand this stuff.
So basically, this case is about this horrible accident. This 17-year-old girl, Mia Erickson, she was a horseback rider.
Right, a talented equestrian.
And sadly, she died during a competition when her horse fell.
A real tragedy.
So her parents understandably wanted some answers, and that's what led to this lawsuit against Mia's coach, Christy Nunning.
And the legal battle here really boils down to this question. Can a parent signing a liability waiver for their child actually shield a coach from claims of, wrongful death or emotional distress?
Unless, like, it was way more than just a simple mistake, right?
Precisely. Unless there was what the law calls gross negligence, which is a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, definitely. So to unpack all this, we've got some legal briefs laying out the case facts arguments,
Right, the actual opinions from the court that heard the case.
plus some legal expert analysis to help us really make sense of it all.
Trying to make sense of the law can feel like navigating a maze sometimes.
For sure. Okay, so let's set the scene. What exactly went down that led to this whole legal battle?
Well, this tragic accident occurred at the Galway Downs International 3-day event. Mia Erickson was participating in the cross-country portion of the competition.
Oh, wow. So like the one with all the jumps and obstacles?
Exactly. It's known for being quite challenging. And during this event, Mia's horse choreography fell at a jump.
Oh, gosh.
And sadly, she sustained fatal injuries.
Awful. Just awful.
It is. Now, Christy Nunnink had been her riding coach for a few years prior to this. And the lawsuit filed by Mia's parents, Karen and Stan Erickson, they argued that Nunnink was negligent in her capacity as coach.
And I seem to remember that part of that negligence claim was about the horse itself, right? Like maybe it shouldn't have been competing.
That's right. That was a key part of their argument. The Erickson's argued that Nunnink knew or should have known that choreography had a history of injuries.
So maybe not the best choice for this level of competition.
Exactly. And they claimed that Nunnink didn't fully inform Mia or her parents about these prior issues with the horse.
Which would be a pretty big deal, right? If the coach knew this horse had a higher risk of injury.
Absolutely. That was the heart of their claim, that Nunnink acted carelessly and irresponsibly and increased the risk to Mia beyond what was reasonable.
Okay, so we've got this horrible accident and the parents claiming the coach was negligent. But wasn't there some kind of waiver involved? Like a document signing away liability?
You're right. There was a formal liability release in place. It's a crucial part of this whole story. About 6 months before the accident, back in May 2006, both Mia and her mother signed this waiver.
So both the young rider and the parent agreed to these terms.
Yes, and the language in that document is really important. It stated that Nunnink would only be held liable for damages that were caused by her, quote, direct, willful, and wanton negligence,
Well,
unquote.
so that specific wording, willful and wanton negligence, that sounds a lot more serious than just regular everyday negligence, right?
Absolutely. It's a much higher bar legally. It implies a deliberate disregard for safety, almost like recklessness.
So not just a mistake, but knowingly putting someone at risk.
Exactly, which is why it became such a central point of contention in the case.
Okay, so we've got the tragedy, the claims of negligence, and this crucial liability waiver, all leading up to the parents deciding to sue. What exactly were they hoping to achieve with this lawsuit? What were the specific claims?
They primarily brought two types of claims. First, a wrongful death claim.
Which makes sense, right? Seeking some kind of justice for the loss of their daughter.
Exactly. And also compensation for the profound loss they suffered.
Right, because a wrongful death claim is about recognizing the value of the life that was lost.
Precisely. And second, they filed a claim for negligent infliction of emotional distress, arguing that they suffered significant emotional harm as a direct result of Nunnink's alleged negligence and, the whole traumatic situation surrounding their daughter's death.
Right, because witnessing something like that would be incredibly traumatic.
Absolutely. It's a separate harm beyond the actual loss of life.
Okay, so we've got the context, the claims. Now let's get into the legal nitty-gritty. What are some of the core legal ideas that the courts had to wrestle with in this case?
Well, there's several big ones that are really crucial to understanding how this all played out. One is this idea of primary assumption of risk.
Okay, I've heard that term before, but what does it actually mean in the context of, like, sports?
Basically, the law recognizes that when you participate in sports, you're voluntarily accepting certain risks that come with that activity.
Right, like if you're playing basketball, you might sprain an ankle or something.
Exactly, or, you know, getting tackled in football.
Yeah.
These are inherent risks.
So you can't sue just because you got hurt doing something that everyone knows is risky.
Right. It's not a free pass to sue every time something goes wrong.
Yeah.
But it's important to understand that this assumption of risk doesn't cover everything. It doesn't protect against conduct that goes way beyond what a participant would reasonably expect.
Okay, so like if the basketball court is covered in oil and you slip and break your leg, that's different.
Exactly. Or in this case, if the coach knew the horse was dangerous and didn't tell anyone.
Right, because that's adding extra risk on top of the normal risks of horseback riding.
Precisely. And that's where this concept of gross negligence that we keep coming back to becomes so important.
Okay, so let's break that down. What does gross negligence actually mean in a legal sense?
It's not just making a mistake or being a little careless. It's a much higher level of culpability. It's basically an extreme departure from what's considered the ordinary standard of conduct.
So like doing something so reckless that it shows a total disregard for safety.
Right.
Yeah.
Courts will often look for evidence that the person acted with complete indifference to the consequences or that they consciously ignored a known risk.
Okay, so if the waiver only protected against regular negligence, but not this willful and wanton stuff, which seems pretty close to gross negligence, what happened next to the case?
Well, Nunnick, the coach, she tried to get the case thrown out early on. She filed what's called a motion for summary judgment, arguing that the liability release signed by Mia and her mom, plus this principle of primary assumption of risk, protected her from being sued.
So she was saying the waiver covered the situation and there's no need for a trial.
Exactly. And initially, the trial court agreed with her. They granted summary judgment and dismissed the case.
Oh, wow. So it seemed like that was the end of it.
But it wasn't the Erickson's Mia's parents. They appealed that decision.
They weren't giving up. They wanted their day in court.
Right. They took the case to the California Court of Appeal. And in 2011, that court actually reversed the trial court's ruling.
Oh, wow. So they overturned the dismissal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The appellate court basically said, look, there are triable issues of fact here, meaning there was enough potential evidence to suggest that Nunnick might have increased the risk to Mia beyond the inherent risks of horseback riding.
So the judges felt there was enough there to warrant a full trial.
Yes. They couldn't just dismiss it outright. So the case went back down to the trial court for a full hearing of all the evidence.
Okay, so round two. What happened at the trial?
Well, after all the evidence was presented, the trial court ended up siding with Nunnick again.
Oh, so even after hearing everything, they still felt she wasn't liable.
They used a specific legal procedure in California to enter judgment in her favor, basically concluding that even though there were questions about her conduct, the Erickson's hadn't proven that she was grossly negligent.
So they met that higher standard of proof that's required for gross negligence.
Right. And of course, this led to yet another appeal in 2015.
So back up to the higher court, this case just wouldn't quit.
It was a long legal battle. So in 2015, the appellate court took another look at everything. And this time they upheld the trial court's decision, ultimately ruling in Nunnick's favor.
So after all that back and forth, the coach was finally in the clear.
Yes. And the reasoning was really interesting. They focused heavily on the validity of the liability release and whether there was enough evidence to prove that Nunnick had acted with gross negligence.
Because that's what the whole case hinged on, right? Whether her actions met that really high bar.
Exactly. And the court said, look, under California law, these types of liability releases, they're generally considered valid and enforceable.
So signing a waiver like that really does have legal weight.
Yes. Unless, of course, they're trying to shield someone from liability for truly egregious conduct like gross negligence or intentional harm.
So they're not a get-out-of-jail-free card for anything.
No. But in this specific case, the waiver that Mia and her mother signed it explicitly covered ordinary negligence, which is the more common type, you know, everyday carelessness.
So basically they were saying she's agreeing not to sue for regular mistakes, just for really extreme recklessness.
Right. And that's why the Erickson's had to prove gross negligence to win this case.
Which, as we've discussed, is a really tough thing to prove.
It is. So the court really scrutinized the evidence that the parents presented. And while they had argued that Nunnick knew the horse was unfit and didn't disclose it properly, The court said, look, we don't see enough evidence to say that she acted with a conscious disregard for Mia's safety.
So they weren't convinced that she knowingly put Mia in harm's way.
Exactly. The court kept coming back to that definition of gross negligence as an extreme departure from the ordinary standard of conduct.
Mm.
And they just didn't see that level of recklessness in the evidence.
So even if she made a mistake or a bad judgment call, it wasn't enough to meet that really high bar.
Precisely. Uh-huh. And this brings us to another interesting layer of the case, the wrongful deaths and emotional distress claims.
Mm-hmm.
How did the waiver impact those specifically?
Yeah, because even though the daughter signed the waiver, the parents didn't, right? So did that make a difference?
It's a tricky area legally. So technically, a liability release signed by a parent for their child doesn't erase the right of the child's heirs to later file a wrongful death claim if the child dies.
Okay, so the waiver doesn't completely block a wrongful death claim?
No. But here's the catch. The court said that the defendant in this case, Nunink, she doesn't owe a higher duty of care to the heirs, the parents, than she owed to the deceased child, Mia.
So the level of responsibility she had to the parents is limited by the waiver that Mia signed.
Exactly. The release essentially set the boundaries of her legal duty. So since they couldn't prove gross negligence, the wrongful death claim failed because they couldn't show that she violated that higher standard of care.
So the waiver didn't automatically throw out the wrongful death claim, but it did change what they had to prove.
It really shaped the whole legal landscape of the case. And then there's the emotional distress claims, which get even more complicated.
Because Mia's mom signed the waiver, but her dad didn't. So how did that play out?
Well, the court treated them differently. The mother's claim for emotional distress was barred completely because she was a co-signer on that waiver.
So by agreeing to those terms, she also gave up her right to sue for her own emotional suffering.
Right. But the father's claim, since he didn't sign anything, it wasn't directly barred by the release.
So it seemed like he might have a chance.
But ultimately, his claim also failed. The court said he couldn't demonstrate that Nunink's actions had significantly increased the risk of harm to Mia, which is usually a necessary element for a bystander claim for emotional distress.
So they were saying he couldn't prove that the coach's actions were the direct cause of his emotional distress?
Right. And even more importantly, the court emphasized that the duty owed to a bystander is no greater than the duty owed to the direct victim.
Which, as we've discussed, was limited by the waiver to avoiding gross negligence.
Exactly. So that one liability release really had a domino effect on all the claims in this case.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing how much power a single document can have, especially in a situation like this.
It really underscores the importance of understanding what you're signing when it comes to these waivers, especially in activities that have inherent risks.
So this case isn't just about the specifics of horseback riding. It raises some bigger questions about how we balance risk and responsibility in sports.
Absolutely. It gets at the heart of why the court decided to uphold these waivers in this type of situation. They're trying to balance competing interests.
Right, because on the one hand, we want to protect people from reckless behavior. But on the other hand, we don't want to discourage people from participating in sports.
Exactly. It's about finding that sweet spot. So the court is acknowledging that sports inherently have risks.
And if every injury led to a lawsuit, it would be a nightmare for coaches and sports organizations.
Exactly. It could make it impossible to offer these activities affordably and safely.
So the court is basically saying, look, people who participate in sports and their parents need to accept that there's a certain level of risk involved.
Right. And that encouraging participation in these activities is a good thing for society.
So it's a tough balancing act, weighing individual safety against the benefits of sports.
It is. And this case is a really good example of how courts are trying to navigate that complexity.
Okay, so let's wrap it up. What are the key takeaways from Erickson v. Nunink for our listeners?
Well, the big one is that in California, at least, liability releases in sports are generally going to be enforced even when a parent signs on behalf of a minor.
So don't assume those waivers are meaningless pieces of paper.
No, they have real legal weight.
Yeah.
But they don't protect against everything. They won't shield someone from liability if they're found to be grossly negligent or if they intentionally cause harm.
So there's a limit to what they can cover.
Right. And in this specific case, the waiver was considered valid because it explicitly covered ordinary negligence. And the parents ultimately couldn't prove that the coach's actions rose to the level of gross negligence.
Which we've talked about is a very difficult thing to prove.
It is. And importantly, this also impacted their claims for wrongful death and emotional distress because the waiver effectively limited the duty of care that the coach owed to that higher standard of avoiding gross negligence.
So this case really highlights the crucial difference between regular negligence and gross negligence.
It's a nuanced distinction, but a very important one in these types of situations.
Erickson v. Nunink really makes you think. It's a tragic story, but it also forces us to grapple with these big questions about where we draw the line between personal responsibility and the duty of care that coaches and organizers owe to athletes, especially young ones.
It's a real-life illustration of how the law tries to balance individual freedom with the need for safety and accountability.
And it leaves us with a final question for our listeners, especially those who are interested in law. How does this case and the principles it highlights apply to other areas of life? Where do we draw that line between accepting risk and holding people accountable when things go wrong? It's something to consider not just in the world of sports, but in any activity that has inherent risks.
It's a thought-provoking question that goes beyond the specific details of this case and gets to the heart of how we navigate risk and responsibility in a complex world.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into a really fascinating and important case. Until next time.
It's been a pleasure.
Take care.
You too.